All right, we will call our work session to order at 5:22, and we have GBAC here to give a presentation.
Thank you. Kind of started the work session off to a good start with some good discussion, so I appreciate that. My name is Bob Fregano. I've been a resident of Lysander for about 30 years. And I'm here today with the Greater Baldwinville Ambulance Corp to share some ideas. Bear with me as I flip over here. Playing with Al in the online session. So as many of you can see in the slide deck, you know, we're here today to discuss the future of GBAC and how to best serve the community. At the end of the day, we are considering what many other ambulance organizations have considered, which is seeking a tax district, and you know, we would like your guys' support and assistance in pursuing that. So when I was putting together this slide deck about a year ago, I actually came across a New York CNY video, and I think if I play this, it really will help set the mood in our current status. So this is where, no matter how many times we tried this, it worked, and I knew it wasn't gonna work here, so let me do that.
Health Department, the number of EMS providers in New York has declined 9% in the last 10 years. Kayla Brady talked to the local ambulance service about why this could be and what the impact is, Kayla.
Maureen, first responders say low pay, a high training time commitment, and a misunderstanding about the profession are all contributing factors to the shortage of EMS workers, but rural areas are struggling the most.
Well, quite frankly, I'm surprised. I think it would probably be higher than that.
That's the reaction Lucas Vandervoort from Brockport Ambulance had about the 9% decrease of New York State EMS workers over the past 10 years.
Most EMS agencies operate on medical reimbursements, healthcare insurance reimbursements. So if the call volume is not there to begin with, that decreases their operating budget, and that makes it harder to pay people to be here to cover those calls. So that's where the volunteer factor comes in.
So low call volume equals low funding, which means a need for volunteers. But volunteers are even harder to come by. Reg Allen is the chief of CHS Mobile Integrated Healthcare. He says some people just can't afford it anymore.
Well, people need to work more than one job sometimes, and so their time to volunteer is limited. So not only is the training requirement high, the time that's available to a lot of people has changed substantially.
Allen says some people get into the field based on what they see on TV. He says they don't last long when they realize the reality.
The trauma and stuff that we experience on a regular basis, people don't stay in this position, this profession, for a long time. And so people that have been in it for a long time are actually outliers.
Despite all of this, Allen says there's a lot of satisfaction in the job.
They're typically seeing them on their worst day. And you can be that person that, you know, is the shining light that says, hey, you know, you're going to be okay, we're going to take care of you, and this is a bad day, but it's going to get better.
According to the report, 59% of rural volunteer responders reported their ability to respond to calls on time was moderately or severely impaired by volunteer shortages. Kayla Green, News 8.
Hi, Kayla, thank you. This report also compares salaries of EMS workers in different parts of the state, and Rochester ranks third highest with an average salary of just over $35,000. Only Albany and Binghamton rank higher.
All right, so you know, I think that really helps set the mood on the challenges that our industry is facing. And so today we're gonna go through, let me see if I can pop back in here. By the way, we couldn't get the microphone going, and can everybody hear me okay?
Interesting.
Asked me to be a little louder. We're gonna quickly run through the history of GBAC and what we've done for the community. We're gonna highlight some of the care that GBAC provides our patients. We're going to go a little bit more detail into today's challenges of EMS as well as GBAC, and then end with a couple slides on our sustainability So first hopping into who we are, actually Mark, you want to give a quick introduction?
Sure. So my name is Mark Procopio. I've been with GDAC since 2004. I've been an EMT since 2006, and I've been on the board of directors since 2010 as president. I volunteer for GDAC. I enjoy volunteering with GDAC. I've been a Lysander resident for my entire life, basically. And, we're here.
And Jim Hogan is our operations director.
Yes. And I'm a resident of the town of Lysander for the last 30 years. I'm originally from the Capital District, but I've been here 30 years now. This is my adult home. I've been doing this a long time. But I've been a volunteer here since 1990, and the last 8 years I've been the director. And in June I retired.
I was just going to say, a very long time.
So much so. And then Chris Cullen is one of our supervisors. Chris Cullen is a career paramedic with us, and he's one of our supervisors. And we've been working closely together, so come June 1st, Chris will be the director starting in June.
Chris, I didn't put years of experience, but do you want to highlight some of them?
Yeah, so my name is Chris, like they said. I've been with GDAC since January 3rd of 2013. I've been a supervisor for majority of that time, since the end of 2013. I've been a paramedic for roughly 15 years now. I've worked in various different capacities and areas such as the city of Syracuse, more rural out in Ontario County, and feel that I finally found my home where I plan to stay for a long time.
Thank you. And some of you may remember Chris was honored here a couple years ago for his service and being awarded the Provider of the Year for New York State EMS. So that was a very, very big award. On the line, but not listening because we're on mute, is Dr. Matt Sarsfield. He is our secretary as well as our medical director. He is a volunteer. He is a ER doc at Kraus.
Upstate.
Thank you. I even have him in my notes right there. He does fantastic work for us. He does ride-alongs. Hopefully you never need our services, but have people like Chris and Dr. Sarsfield is absolutely outstanding. The rest of our board is made up of either people in the industry that are volunteers or former operations directors, as well as other people that represent good disciplines of business. We have representation in legal, HR. There's also another CPA on the board, Lisa Han, who's our treasurer, and then myself. I'm a CPA by trade. I'm financial controller for about a $900 million business unit at ITT Gould's Pumps. So I basically just have 60 international sites, and I'm always asking what time of day it is in that country. So that's kind of our leadership structure. As far as GVAC, we actually are an ambulance service that responds to over 4,000 calls a year, which is quite a bit. As many of you know, we are a not-for-profit organization. We do have a rig in service and a crew ready 24 hours a day. Many times we have two or three, just so that if one's out, another one can respond. We were founded in 1962 and have been honored to serve the community since then. We have a great team full of career providers, some that are part-time, and then a dwindling population of volunteers. I think in here, and we'll highlight it later, we had, what was it, 80?
Back in the, when volunteering was, a popular thing in the, in the 60s, 70s, and in the 80s. At one time, GBC had a membership of about 80 people. Unfortunately, as the training became more intense and the calls became higher volume, all civic organizations are suffering from the lack of volunteers, so unfortunately EMS is not any different.
Yep. And I think this slide is kind of the most eye-opening for me. So I've only been with the organization for about 5 years. If you asked me 6 years ago, what happens when you get injured, you call 911, okay? Who comes to you? I would say the ambulance. Where's that come from? I have no clue. I didn't know if 911 funded these ambulances. I didn't know if the closest hospital sends it. I had no clue that it was right by the bowling alley this whole time or by the library. So, you know, I think that's really crazy to know that there's this whole industry behind it. And some of the remarkable things that these gentlemen here can do, you know, they literally bring the ER to you. And in many sense, that's the entree. They have a router that when they put the EKG, I believe, see, I'm not the expert here, but that feeds right into the hospital. So the doctor can start your care literally from minute one that we arrive. So I think that's just absolutely outstanding. Our response time is about 8 minutes from call to house, which is really impressive with how large of an area we're covering. And we do try to serve our community. We do live by a mission that we are going to do the best for this community, and we're very proud of that. As far as who we serve, you can see the breakout here, and maybe you can read it just as well as I can. But in summary, it's basically the Beeville School District is a majority of it, and we do have small pieces that we're required to cover around it. It ends up being about 100 square miles, which is a significant coverage. And it includes all of the partial of 10 fire districts.
The percents up there are percents of calls.
Yep, from the 911 call center.
Yep.
All right, so now that we talked a little bit about us, we wanted to highlight some challenges to EMS. I think the video obviously focused a lot on those. We'll quickly run through the volunteers and shortages there, rising costs, uncompensated care, which we started with, and then the increased demand in service. So as we talked about a little bit earlier, fewer volunteers is obviously not the most attractive to most people. The time of when your shifts would be, as well as the type of work we do. does not make it the easiest of volunteer activities. Also, it's strenuous on the body and stuff like that. So I think the nature of it is not very attractive. And then as mentioned earlier, the training is significant. So it's not like anybody can just hop into this type of volunteer work. One of the problems that we're facing, and this is a national problem, this is not just GBC or the region, is there's such a shortage in providers. And a lot of this comes back to the education and salaries. You know, at the end of the day, a little bit more education and these individuals could pursue a career in nursing or beyond. We do see a lot of people will leave our program and go to the police force, troopers, etc. So, you know, we're just seeing a huge struggle in trying to find good providers when we do have turnover or people who retire. Another thing that is not new to GBAC or the rest of the organization is higher costs. These are our audited fiscal year 19 versus 20. Our year end is in April, so these numbers are just before the pandemic hit us hard at least. But you can see that you know, we do have rising costs, and a lot of this is just outside of our control. It's either market driven, or at times it's the health department will mandate something and then we have to respond. Whether that's a new piece of equipment that needs to be on board for us to keep our certifications or training or whatever the case may be, they push that down without zero support in the way of funding. So it's just an expectation that you now need to live up to that standard. We'll spend a couple minutes here on the uncompensated care because it seems to be, you know, something that we would all be concerned about. As we mentioned, if we do not transport, we are unable to bill the insurance company. And so about 30% of our calls, so we go on, I think last year was 4,300 calls, 30% of that was just us going for a Sunday drive. So, you know, that becomes very expensive. We also miss other opportunities to help individuals in our community because we'll miss a call. I think that's something that we always try to manage. We manage well, we get there, we determine if they're gonna be transported or not very quickly, and then we try to get back home.
I think what Rob mentioned there is 30% of the time we get to the person's home, for example, the paramedics determine the patient, we can take care of the patient, provide them care, but they don't need to go to the hospital.
Right. Another good example would be if I witnessed a car accident and I, oh man, that was bad. You know, I call 911, they send an ambulance, and then we find out it wasn't as bad as I had anticipated. That would be another instance where we would not be compensated.
And then we do a lot of what's called lift assist. But we have a big elderly population, and for some reason, the older you get, you have trouble standing upright. You just don't stay upright when you're older. So a lot of our community, they fall. They're not injured, but they need help getting up. And EMS is who goes. The police don't help the people up, usually. Fire departments don't provide lift assist. EMS gets called to do the lift assist. And so we like to do it. We do it a lot. But insurance companies don't. You can't bill for a lift assist. So if somebody's on Medicaid, Medicare, or any kind of any insurance, you provide the care, and it's free.
Or close to, yeah. Another thing is Medicare and Medicaid, we actually don't cover our costs to go to that call from reimbursement from those. So that becomes very challenging. And as Jim mentioned, you know, with the elderly population that is using our services, it definitely throws a little bit of a dimension into our mix of transports, Medicare, Medicaid versus, you know, primary insurance. We talked about write-offs, and this is, we'll bill an insurance company or an individual, and they will either short pay us or not pay us at all. So we have about 150K of write-offs every year, which is very substantial to our business. And this is really the problem, is the high cost of readiness. We have to be staffed, paying a team at the station to be ready to go out on that call. We need to have the right number of ambulances in rotation between getting them repaired, we have to have the right medical equipment. And so those costs definitely build up time and time again. It definitely forces us to make sure that we're staffing appropriately, kind of like a heat map. So we can always tell, you know, 2 p.m. on a Saturday is always gonna be a little more active than, you know, 2 a.m. on a Tuesday night. So, you know, we try to be appropriate so that we, you know, can respond and match kind of our business. And then one thing that I think, you know, was a little bit of an eye-opener for me was the amount of overdoses our community faces, and I think all of us have a personal story here, but it's actually one of the highest cost of care calls that we go on several times a month. It's also one that we don't get compensated for probably the least. So, you know, I think that's a struggle for us and something that we're learning to deal with and cope with in our own ways. And then kind of the fourth challenge to GBAC is the increased demand in our service. So actually the Brockport was referring to rural communities didn't have the call volume to kind of cover their fixed costs. We actually are doing okay in that department in that Beetle's growing. However, we need to be a little bit more agile as we bring on new paramedics. Oh, by the way, there's a shortage. So it's actually been working disadvantageous to us, unfortunately. Now we're going to hop into sustainability. I only have two slides here, so one is just on upstate New York or New York in general. In the last 5 years, we've had over 100 ambulance corps close their doors. On the right side here, we have a couple examples. And so what we've seen and what's been the trend for many years is these not-for-profits will seek tax assistance. And so we have many on the bottom right here. One thing to note is, and this was kind of very recent to many of us, is Waves, you know, wasn't very proactive in their approach and had to request an emergency bailout from the town of Camillus. Not only did they have to receive that bond, but they also surrendered the mortgage to their location. As far as our sustainability at GBAC, you can see the growing population has led to an increase in our service revenue. So that's, you know, our call volume and service revenue associated with that. However, you can see our operating income, what we kind of earned for the year, has been relatively flat and definitely not growing with the trend of revenue. And this just becomes an issue of those rising costs associated with capital expenditures as well as wages. So, you know, we're here today, obviously, to share what our value is to the community, but it's also, you know, we're looking out the best interest of the organization and serving our community. We are in no ways in a dire situation where we're seeking funding. We were still above the line in that income, which is good. However, we're being very fiscally responsible to say that there are challenges coming our way. The $15 an hour wage increase at the federal level, other things like that that we're definitely keeping a pulse on, that will be a challenge to us. And so in the near future, we do think that it would be prudent for us to explore a tax district. And so that's why we're here looking for your help. So with that, any questions, comments?
How soon are you looking to do this tax district? What do you think your time frame is with that?
I mean, we would like it right away.
Like tomorrow, right?
Yeah. I mean,
now when we talked before, it was my understanding, and maybe I didn't, you know, I could be off on that, but I thought you were looking at doing it in combination with Van Buren, the Village, and Lysander. What about, I saw Geddes was up there.
Geddes is about 7% of our calls.
Right. So would they be included in the mix, or how? What's your plan? How do you see this going?
Well, we wanted to start with Lysander because we live here and we figured that that was the, you guys know us the best, and it was a place that we felt comfortable to start. It's just. And I think Bob can relate a lot to this. What's going on is we've been trying to run the organization we have over the years with them as a volunteer organization and supplemented with some career people. But like as Bob mentioned now, to be a paramedic, we have to provide paramedic service. We cannot say tomorrow, well, we'll just do basic life support. The state won't allow it. So now to become a paramedic is pretty equivalent to becoming a nurse. So we've realized that there really isn't anybody going to go to nursing school with the idea of getting out and doing it for free. So, and then the paramedics historically have been paid pretty low. Like, just think of trying to get a police officer to work for $35,000 a year. So what was happening is, because people aren't getting into it, the pay of the paramedics are going up. And right next door to us, they just formed a union to make the pay go up, which is not a bad thing. And then I'm losing two paramedics today, this week, because what attracts them, if you're into this civil service type position, you can be a police officer, get a civil service job, get a pension. You can become the town of DeWitt, Fayetteville, Manulis, the towns, the villages, they actually have a career fire service. So you can go there and become a career firefighter, paramedic, get a civil service job. So I'm losing one paramedic this month to DeWitt, and I'm losing another one to the village of Manulis. I've lost people to become sheriffs, city of Syracuse police officer, New York State trooper. So we need to get some additional funding so we can compete to be able to hire these people, high quality people, pay them appropriately, so we can provide the service. So that's really the big that's the big change that's going on. It's not a bad thing at all. It's just that it's time for us to really make to do two things. One is really make sure the community knows what we do. I mean, it's the cops and the care that we give, and then also make sure the community realizes too that if there's a cost to this. You just can't imagine trying to operate your highway department with volunteers.
So my question would be is if you create a debt tax district and I need ambulance service and I'm in one of those districts, am I going to pay for it out of my insurance as well too?
Yes, yeah, that's a great question. So how it works is similar, a good analogy is like OCRA, the Onondaga County Water Authority. There's the taxes that paid to Onondaga County Water Authority to provide water service, and then once a quarter I get a bill for water usage. So we could not bill anymore, but the only way to do that is then the tax money we get would cover all our expenses.
Right.
So we're not asking that.
No, so I understand that. So with your analogy, so that means like TLC can't operate here then?
Well,
they can't set up shop. So if they want to buy a building over in Lysander,
they could try to, but for the state, it's called a certificate of need. We're the primary, we have the primary CON for this area.
Okay. Yep.
So the 911 call center would call us first
and then they'd be
second. Or second or third, depending how many rigs we have.
Yep.
Before it would.
So when you were talking about waves, they were talking about disbanding, correct? Wasn't that?
I don't want to really get into other people's business.
No, but what I was saying is, my point is, if you were to disband, but like they said, well, we can't operate, we're going to have disband, who would take up the ambulance service out here?
Well, so it would be, it would be a long process before that we ever got to that point.
Correct.
And I would never want to do that, and that would absolutely be at the cost of the community.
It would be up to the New York State Health Department would decide that.
Yeah, once they decided that we were unfit to cover our CON.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting it, I'm just saying so people would know. I mean, what would the process be?
Yeah.
You know, if that came up, we'll go with somebody else, like you said.
Yeah.
I mean, people probably don't know where ambulance service comes from and what the issues are with getting people here.
Right. And to answer your question, in the immediate term, if we were to go under, our neighbors would have to try to cover their calls plus ours, which would be really difficult because they're already, stretched pretty thin to what they can cover.
Yeah.
And then from there, we'd have to figure out who would best suit to take over the area.
You talk about non-payment, right? I love your service, I used it 3 times. The only problem I had was my insurance company sent me the check.
Yeah.
Right? I went there and I got the check and I told the lady at the front desk, I said, this is absurd. Do these, and it was a lot of money.
Right.
I said, do these people ever keep this check?
All the time.
Did we pay you to say this?
No, right. I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
so that's a great story. So here's the reason. Blue Cross Blue Shield.
It was Blue Cross Blue Shield, my insurance.
Yes. God bless insurance companies. they want to pay us the Medicare rate. And so we like GBC said, so, well, no, I mean, why should we pay that low rate? For, you know, people are paying for insurance premiums. So they said, okay, well, if you don't negotiate and let us pay the Medicare rate, then when you take care of a patient, we're going to send the patient the money. And then guess what happens sometimes? The person's having a heart attack. Chris saves the person's life, takes them to upstate. Not only did Chris save their life,
they get a nice little Christmas bonus too.
Yeah. Now,
it also can get tied up in the States.
It doesn't happen every day, but it happens.
Oh yeah, I could see where it happens. You know. Yeah.
Did you do that?
No, I'm like, hey, I signed this over there. Like, no, you have to write a check. Yeah.
So and that's one of the other 25 foot like write off.
Yeah, that's absurd.
But it's the insurance company. Now there is legislation. We talked about legislation about having the insurance companies pay us for when we take care of somebody, but we don't transport them. There also is legislation trying to force the insurance companies not to do what you just talked about.
That's huge.
But
so simple, right? Just
yeah.
Why don't you go
so far it hasn't been able to get through state because of the power of the insurance company's lobbyists.
So where are you going from here then? So you started with us. So now what's your plan moving forward?
Well, how much money are you looking for?
Yeah, so we do have a slide on that. Ideally, we would keep it obviously something reasonable. You know, I think in our minds, we would look to raise between the three towns initially, and we would absolutely try to get Geddes on board. We have had a discussion with their supervisor just, you know, to check the temperature, and he seemed very willing to and receptive to bring it. But, you know, the goal would be to set up a tax district with the town of Lysander, Van Buren, and the village, and seeking to raise $400,000. Most of that would go to an overnight shift where we are dropping calls. We do have one crew on at all times. This would be the weekday overnight shift. So
when you did the math, it's like
it's a couple bucks at that.
Yeah,
it's not.
The problem with the including Van Buren and the village is that we can't create a district that goes into another municipality. So they would have to have their own district, we would have our district. And then the question becomes, how do you divvy up what each district is paying?
Correct, yeah.
It goes on the tax bill, obviously, so.
Right.
We can't tell Van Buren what to pay, they can't tell us what to pay.
Right. And we could come up with something equitable as far as 911 calls, square miles, you know, what are a ratio of those two, weighted average, you know, whatever.
But the bottom line is, we could agree to do a district, but it doesn't do much good if Van Buren and the village doesn't do it.
Correct, yeah, so.
We're all by ourselves.
Right, and that's where I think we'll definitely have to do work here as well as there, and we've had discussions with both the teams there, not a formal presentation by any means, but I mean, that'll be our next stop, you know, as soon as we can get on their agenda, but.
We got to start somewhere. Like, a good analogy would be, and Bob would be familiar with this, there is an ambulance, it's smaller than us, but it's called MAVES, it's Marcellus Ambulance. They cover the town of one of the towns they cover is the town of Marcellus, and then the town set up an ambulance tax district, just like the water department or the library. So they get some money from the town of Marcellus, and it's a separate line item, just like the fire department. And then they also have things I think with the town of Tisco. A good friend of mine, Steve Knapp, is the director there. And then he did what, so basically how he explained it is that the town set this up. So we wanted to start here.
Do you have any idea what their residents pay there? Because they're smaller than us. I think they only have, Marcellus has about 6,000 residents. Do you have any idea what their?
I would have to call and find out. I
I mean, is that something, yeah, I mean, for our next meeting, if you could have something like that, because I think what we'll probably want to do, I mean, once you get through with all the towns, you probably want to get us all together in a room and then start talking, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing, I mean, we do have some comparables. I think Johannesburg, they got, how many, 800 calls a year?
Yeah, that's a town up in the, way up in the Adirondacks.
Right.
So, what,
we do have comparables.
Yeah.
The thing, but this is what's interesting, because I've lived here for 30 years, but this is the sixth ambulance corps that I'm involved with. I've been with the town, I've been in the colony, Clifton Park, Capitol, the Saratoga County, the Glens Falls area, Binghamton. This is the only one that doesn't receive tax money. So what we're trying to ask for, we're not going to get an award for thinking. Like, when I talk to people in the Capitol District and I say that we don't receive tax money, their first reaction is, yes, you do. You just don't realize it. So, the point I'm trying to make is, we've been able to do it without it, and we're really proud of it, but it's just now time to do this, and then we just need your help to set this up. And we want to get it going with Lysander first, and we don't want to have it all stalled. I mean, then we move to each town. But I hope we just want to get it going.
Well, I think that, you know, do you have meetings set up with Van Buren and the village, or no?
We're not on their agenda yet.
No. So I think that in doing things with them, I mean, we have Canton Woods, where the village, you know, runs it. We have, we pay a portion, they pay a portion. So it's not something that's uncommon, you know, that we should be able to work out. But I think before we jump in on it, and anybody else can speak up, but I think we would want to get them at least to have you have this presentation, then we can set that meeting up. We do it right, you know, we'd get it going.
Yeah,
you know, we wouldn't stall on it.
Van Buren, like Howard Tupper, they know we're here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with them a couple of days ago. I saw them, because I got a call from the codes officer for Van Buren that he wanted to have a public safety meeting. So I was there last week, and then they know that we're meeting tonight. And then, so they're for this. They just, now is just time, you know, we greatly appreciate the community's support over the years. So now we just need to set this up, because
formalize it.
Yes. I mean, the other way of doing, which I don't think is the correct way, is to make a contract with the town, but then we would be asking for money to come out of your budget. So what Albany tells me is the right way to do it is to set up a separate tax district, just like the library.
Yeah, see, and those are things that we're going to have to get all our attorneys together in a room, your attorney, and then, but we should all be there when we discuss those things, so everybody is aware of, you know, what their portion is going to, you know, about, you know, what they're going to, liability is going to be, and the taxpayers and things like that. So I think as soon as you set that up, and we'll have an opportunity to talk about it as well.
We all look at this as a positive thing. You know, we just need to formalize it.
Are we on at 6?
Yeah, we gotta jump on that.
Yeah, we gotta.
All right,
I didn't mean
thank
to shortcut
you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Sorry, I was late.
I'll give you a call, or you can call me, either way.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
And we'll talk some more about this.
What's that? No, I'm going to go right here. Where it pops
yeah.
up.
Thank you.
All right.
Gentlemen, if you've got, like I said, you have the link for this Zoom meeting, so you can ask questions of the county. If you could log in on your cell phones or on a device for my email. If not, if you don't have anything you can log in on, I can bring the computer around to you if you have a question.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't bring mine in because I never bring it in, so.
You don't know the Wi-Fi password, do you?
Yes, I do. It's TOL1794 capital T-O-L. No, lower, all lowercase, T-O-L-17940.
Is that the Wi-Fi or is that the, that's not the call?
That's the Wi-Fi.
All right, it didn't work. All right, T-O-L.
17940.
Did you say you're going to send that link?
I sent it to your county mail.
Times characters. T-O-L.
You want us to get on Zoom?
Yes, because I sent you a link on Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Or yesterday.
I don't have it here.
I got that one.
I hate my email. I've got the one in the law change on the 25th, Al, but I don't have this one.
Okay. Send it to you guys.
You said you're going to send it again?
Yep, send it again.
Okay. I'm waiting for it to pop up. You said you sent it yesterday, though?
Yep. I just reset it.
You sent it to everybody, too?
Your kid doesn't have a computer?
Come on.
Came on my watch, Al.
Son went to Liverpool. They all had computers when we were in 1999. Every kid.
Yeah, I'll try to watch it up there while I wait for
the Apple IIc growing up and the
yeah. Yeah, they went and you know every.
I can't see all the participants.
I think the first year.
Chromebook.
Yeah, that worked out pretty well for him.
Shannon, can you hear me? Yes, go ahead.
Actually, we can hear you.
I could
use a little volume.
One second, Frank. I got to plug one more thing in here. Frank, go ahead and say something.
He's got to keep talking.
Keep talking for a second. Frank, you live in the wrong spot then.
I got Frank, but I don't have any of the other participants.
Yeah, we're all in the room. For some reason, the audio isn't going back through the PA. We just had it set up for another computer and it was going fine now. We lost it.
You might have to mute your phone when.
You're
muted unless you're going to speak.
If it starts to back feed.
Oh, are you? Okay.
It's almost easier to watch Al's up there.
Is it better now, Al?
We still have one phone that seems to be on that is echoing.
We still have one. phone that seems to be on it.
Something has happened.
There you go.
You want to say something?
Have I asked? Are we still echoing me?
No echo, and I have an idea. I'm going to have to just do it with the mic and the PA in the room.
Yeah, I mean, it means we watch it from there. It's watching from here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's off.
You want to say something to make sure the mic picks it up?
And then it says password, but I don't know which password it is. Password for him. Oops. Is it the password for my email account? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. Are you trying to get this presentation?
I think we got that figured out.
Dark side.
Huh, mine just on Zoom. You know, Tony?
Okay, you're up on the screen, and you can go ahead and start.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's really what I'm
doing. It's going to be on it, yeah.
Right.
I can barely hear him.
I'm going to try something else. Hang on 1 second, Frank. We're going to try something else real quick.
Is there a way to do like a conference call and then stare at the...
No, it's working. We're going to do the phone. Okay. Frank, go ahead and talk.
Thank you. high-level strategy concerning why we think it's a good opportunity for your local assets, sewer assets, combined with our county assets, so we have one unified system. That's part of what we hope to show you tonight. The second part is to get a little more granular and specific to Town of Lysander and look specifically at some of your assets and our approach to rehabilitation of those assets and eventually what it means to the typical ratepayer that makes up your town. And like I said, at the end, we'll take any questions you have. I need to tell you right up front that this is a strategy that County Executive Management has put forth. It's as much an economic development strategy as it is an infrastructure renewal strategy. And I think what we're all starting to realize through this process is everybody's better off within the consolidated district if there is an entity that controls not only flows and technical information and maintenance and everything else that goes along with this from toilet to treatment rather than have it segmented or fractured in its ownership. And we'll show you an example of the matter. So, next slide, please. So, this is a representation of what we call the CSD, the Consolidated Sanitary District, as it exists. Each one of the colors represent a different service area. That service area has a wastewater treatment plant that's associated with it. Your service areas over on the left, ESK or Baldwin's Lysander Falls, a wastewater treatment plant. So there's six separate service areas. There are 19 municipalities within the district itself. And really it's made up of this complex network of all kinds of sewer assets. All kinds of things. I can tell you that we have a little bit of an echo, but I'll talk to you about it if you can deal with it. I can tell you that this is our second service area that we are putting forth under consolidation. The first one was the number of limestone service area down on the right portion of the screen in that reddish color. In that service area, local municipalities, for the most part, have signed on to the lease arrangement and now are part of the sanitary assets of Montgomery County. So you are a phase two, effectively. ESK, as I mentioned before. And I can tell you just this past week, the legislature approved a leasing arrangement with ESK, the service area, and the municipalities. So this is a little representation of the current sewer structure, both on the local level and on the county level. So you can see on the left side, local municipalities, like the town of Lysander, you have your own sewers. Obviously, you have your small pump stations, your manholes, your laterals. Together, they make up the assets that you're responsible for. And in most cases, unless you're a village, you have sewer funds and sewer districts by which you're able to raise funds and then charge them back for reimbursement. Some towns have limited capital investment in their assets. Oftentimes, what's below ground and out of sight and out of mind is something that maybe doesn't get top priority. And there's a wide range of fees that go along with the town and village-owned assets that your constituents see on your tax bills, anywhere from $0 to $400. In concert with that, in combination with that, on the right side are the county sewer department attributes. So we own the big wastewater treatment plants, as you know. We own the big pump stations and the big truck sewers that take the flows from your assets. We have a sewer fund, a dedicated sewer fund, separate from the county. It's almost like a separate utility, or is part of Montgomery County. And it has a budget. About $100 million budget for O&M and capital investment and revenues and expenditures. As part of that budget, as part of that fund, we have a long-term capital improvement plan. And that's our plan to upgrade and renew our assets, our county assets. All that combines and boils down to a annual sewer unit charge that everybody within the consolidated district pays on a yearly basis. 448.81 is the most basic annual charge. So one of the challenges often people ask or question is why am I seeing two separate charges on the debt, one at the town level, one at the county level. You'll see as we move through this, it's our goal to have everything wrap up and roll into one unit sewer unit charge for the constituency. Next slide, please. So here's part of the challenge, and here's really the motivation for the strategy of trying to combine. Right now it's segmented ownership. On the left, you can see a typical residential home. Private lateral comes out, connects to the local town system, and then shoots over to the right side of the diagram, and that's where our county truck sewers pick it up and take it to the treatment plant. One of the challenges we face is that, as you can imagine, we have permit requirements throughout our system, but most pronounced at the wastewater treatment plant and at the discharge. One of the challenges that we face is if we don't understand, if we don't know the level of condition, age, and potential impacts to your system, it eventually ends up in our system where we're responsible for the permit at the end of the pipe at the end of the plant. And one of the things that we're challenged with every time we have weather conditions is what's called infiltration and inflow, which is basically groundwater and stormwater enters the sewers through crack pipes, through manholes, many different ways. But it's basically clean water that ends up being transferred to our plant and through our conveyance structures. It needs to be treated. And that's a real challenge. That's one of the drivers behind trying to have a continuous system, one that we own, one that we can maintain, one that we can start to prioritize around this little cancerous animal called I&I, which affects every town and every village and every municipality within the district. Nobody is absolutely clean on this. It's just the nature of the beast. So part of what we're promoting here and doing this is once we have ownership of your system, we then begin to prioritize through an approach to take care of I&I and other problems. So we don't have permit problems that are playing.
Next slide.
Yes, thank you. So a little bit about I&I, because it does have a huge impact. It has a financial impact, as you can see on the top left. It has a capacity impact on the top right. And it has a regulatory impact on the bottom. Three big impacts from something that is prevalent, not only in our systems and on our county, but throughout any areas with wet weather flows. And it's a real challenge. As I said before, sometimes the challenge doesn't rise to the surface because it's underground and we don't often see it, but we feel the impacts of it during an extreme storm event or an extreme snow melt or some other condition that allows the I&I to enter our system. And again, it's clean water that we have to spend money to treat. So it taxes our assets and it hurts our, it takes up conveyance and it costs us money, energy costs, asset renewal costs, and other things that add up very quickly. So one of the benefits we think of trying to consolidate is let's put those local assets in the hands of the web that has resources skill sets to be able to take care of I&I and other things. Not to say that you don't as well, but when we look at it comprehensively, we have the ability with our equipment and our staff to prioritize in very effective means and hopefully get things done and take care of I&I and other problems with our conveyance and treatment structures. Next slide, please. So, that's a little bit of an overview, and we think that action is needed now. We really have two choices, right? And this choice is entirely yours. You do not have to consolidate. This is something that's up to the town. It's something that you will need to vote on. And when you do vote on it, we've already voted on it at the legislature, so you can almost automatic. But we really have two choices. We can continue as is, segmented ownership, and you can continue to work on your assets and deal with your assets yourself, and that's certainly an option. If you do that, remember that I&I is just one challenge. It could continue, it could get worse. We know that the regulatory pressures and penalties will surge over time. We know that sometimes local municipalities, not all of them, some of them, have very limited resources, both in cash and in other resources to be able to maintain and fix what needs to be fixed. And at the end of the day, well, because we're all connected, it's forced to spend billions of dollars to what we'll call supersizing our treatment plants because of the I&I. You can see the picture on the left is the same picture as before, only the size of the treatment plant is much bigger. And the problem with that is, as Al will tell you, and many others will tell you, the costs associated with getting more capacity at a treatment plant, spending more dollars at a treatment plant to supersize it, to take care of issues like this, is tremendous. And that cost is borne by the entire population pool in the consolidated sanitary district. So what will be forced to do that if the I&I problems aren't addressed? And again, as you know, if you do nothing, which is clearly an option, your sewer customers will continue to pay two sewer fees, the county unit charge, which will be going up over time, and then the lower sewer fees as well. And I remember looking back at some of your assets. Most of your maintenance assets are in the neighborhood of 35 to 45 years old, so they're reaching close to the end of their useful life. That's important to keep in mind. The second option, next slide, is that if you choose to consolidate, here's what it means. It means that now we will take ownership by virtue of the lease arrangement of the system that was one time yours, the main system that was today, as it is today, yours. And so that black line now is one continuous line from the private lateral to the treatment plant. That means that all operations, maintenance, and capital investment now falls under the umbrella of one. Community benefits, because we believe there's an efficiency in the economy of scale in doing that. We have the resources, as I mentioned, to attack I&I problems, prioritize those problems, and deal with them in many different ways, through term contracts, through contractors, even with our design professionals that help us look at areas, maybe some areas in the town of Lysander that might need some help. One of the big keys is that the financing falls under one jurisdiction. So we're constantly looking at grant and other low interest and other financing enhancements to try to get the best value for our dollar. With the financing falling under us, you will then qualify our percent of grant work that we solicit on a yearly basis. It does consolidate all the costs into a single sewer fund, our WEP fund and our WEP budget, and your constituents will see one sewer unit charge on their tax. So after our research and our extensive work up until this point, we think consolidation is the best solution for each one of these reasons. But most importantly is the statement at the bottom that this will ensure a uniform level or levels of service and customer costs no matter where you live within the district. At the end of the day, each one of the treatment plants, including yours, discharges to a water body. Those water bodies are recreational assets for the entire community. So it behooves us all to make sure we're doing everything we can in a cost-effective means and in a good technical means to preserve the intent of those law providers. That's why we think that consolidation, amongst other things, is a good solution to this challenge. And this is not new. This is something that's done in other areas. In fact, if you were to set up Onondaga County today, you would set it up as a network that was all connected. Next slide. So there is some truth to this slide, although it's a cliche that we are all in this together. You know, as we bring more and more municipalities into the mix here, whatever needs you may have in your town will be born in part of the rest of the community, and whatever needs the rest of the community has will be born in part by you. At the end of the day, you will see in a few slides why that makes sense. You know, you might think, well, why do I have to pay for somebody that lives in Clay or Manlius? And then those same people in Clay and Manlius are saying, well, why do I have to pay for somebody that lives in Baldwin's, Wisconsin, and Bowles area? The reason is we're all there. We're all there with a set of assets that are someday, in short order, going to require rehabilitation. Would we rather spread that cost over a smaller pool, like a single town, or a bigger pool, like an entire consolidated district? And then we have all the other benefits that we've already talked about. Next slide. So Shannon, I think you're going to pick up here.
Yes, thanks, Frank. So, as Frank mentioned, I just want to give you a little bit of background. I think Frank touched on it. Here's a little bit of the detail on the consolidation initiative. We spent a considerable amount of time at the end of 2019 and early in 2020 on phase one, which targeted the Meadowbrook Limestone Wastewater Service Area, particularly because that area is subject to a consent order directly related to INI, because there's a pretty considerable amount of excess clean water that surcharges that facility, has resulted in permit violations. And so it's definitely the worst, but it is not unique in its problem. And as Frank pointed out, it's something that we see robbing capacity throughout all of our treatment plant service areas. So when we targeted Meadowbrook Limestone first, we did enter in and fully execute long-term lease agreements. We have four municipalities that we're responsible for: the towns of Manlius and Pompey, and the villages of Fayetteville and Manlius. I don't know why that says DeWitt. We are in discussions with the town of DeWitt. We have not executed a contract with them yet. Once those lease agreements were executed, what happened for those four municipalities is we assumed full responsibility for all operating costs. We transferred over utility bills for their pump stations, phone lines. We took on all of those accounts, and we do full O&M service like we do for the town of Lysander and IMA. We do that for these communities, only they won't get billed back for it at the end of the year. That lease agreement also allows us the opportunity to go in and initiate a $9 million capital investment. We are doing, through term contracts, sewer lining, manhole repair, lateral lining, pretty comprehensive rehabilitation, and we've issued over $2 million in work in that community in the first 3 months that we started the project. So we're moving really aggressively and in hopes to relieve capacity at the plant, get that INI out. We're now looking at, as Frank mentioned, Baldwin's, Wisconsin, and Knowles, the town of Van Buren, the town of Lysander, and the village of Baldwinsville. This is a service area that, for a lot of reasons, for us, we looked at from a financial perspective with COVID. You've got, you know, Van Buren and Lysander, you're relatively young communities. Your systems are relatively young. But the village of Baldwinsville is not. And there's an opportunity there to do some investment with the village of Baldwinsville and other capital needs let's talk a little bit about the town of Lysander's sewer assets. We have this information. This is pulled from our GIS mapping program and our maximum asset database that we use to provide your sewer maintenance services. As I mentioned, if you look at the left, we've got a breakdown of your sewer mains. You've got about almost 52 miles of sewers in the town. That's quite a bit. It's half as many miles, but pretty considerable when you look at how big the town is and how much of it is sewered. So there's a lot of assets out there. But as Frank mentioned, they're under the ground and a lot of times forgotten. But your system is relatively new. The majority of it is 40% or newer. It's a lot of it's PVC and or has been lined. But there is a portion of it. There's about 2.5 miles of what we call dry sewers. There's some subdivision out there that have sewers that are not actually connected in those properties. So they have a sewer system, but the properties are on subdivision. So there's opportunity there at some point someday to connect those and actually get that onto the sewer system. There's just about a little over 1,200 manholes and about 5,300 laterals and or like service connections, as we call them. That's a lot of houses that would have potential sewer issues that would need a house call to go to them to restore flow and or a broken lateral that may be allowing groundwater in. In terms of pump stations, any place we get to where we can't get gravity all the way, we've got a pump station. There's 10 of them in the town of Lysander. I would say that of the 10 of them, 8 of them have been significantly rehabbed and or rebuilt, which is great, but there are 2 that are, you know, 70, 80, and really need a pretty significant investment, and we'll talk about those in a minute. And with those pump stations, you've got about another 6 miles of force main related, and on this map, that's these little red lines that you're seeing here. So this black dot's your pump station, the red line is the force main taking that flow to an adjacent gravity area. So why do we care? What are the big issues? What are we looking at when we're talking about a sewer system? And EPA is really driving this, and it's become the forefront of our discussion at WEP, largely because of medical limestone, but also because of the need to maintain proper sewer flow and capacity throughout the Consolidated Sanitary District. So we've got EPA, what they're called CMOP standards, Capacity Management, Operation, and Maintenance. These standards set by EPA are to ensure that as a sewer maintenance or a sewer owner, you're out there, you're looking at it on a routine basis because it's out of sight. So they want you out there looking at this. Every 7 years for sewer mains or 15% per year, same thing for manholes, 15% per year. So based on those numbers that I showed before, that's about 7.5 miles a year that should be cleaned and televised. So run a camera down through it and take a look at it. What does it look like structurally? 190 manholes per year need to be inspected. That's set by EPA. When you look at the middle, this other column, 2019, when we look back, the service agreements, our records, we did pretty good with the sewer main cleaning. We did about 12%. We did only 1%, so we would need to up that number. We need to get that closer to 15%. In terms of manholes, we did about half of the target from EPA. We did about 85 manholes in 2019. Some other services related to your sewer system, dig safe utility markouts. Under our contract with you, somebody calls 811, call before you dig, we go out. We have 135 calls, that's about average for a year. We go out, we label, mark out spray paint, your sewer mains, your laterals. House calls, those 5,300 laterals, we got called 40 times in 2019. It's a pretty low number, actually, percentage-wise, compared to some other municipalities. But we did have 7 of those had 7 houses had 2 or more visits, and we'd like to move those to a about $110,000 a year. And I will say that 20% of that was for the West Entry Pump Station alone. And I'll get into that in the next slide, when I'm talking about where that pump station is. We do provide these O&M services to the municipality, to you folks now. On average, the bill has been about $160,000 a year. Per the comptroller's audit of our service fees, we have been historically providing them at below market rates and below recommended levels. If we were to adjust those service rates to what the comptroller concluded, that bill would go up to $280,000. That's a pretty big increase we would need to pass on to your users. If we increase those 2019 levels to meet the EPA standards, that bill goes up even more to about $320,000. So that's almost a doubling our contract services to meet both providing a market rate service and meeting those EPA levels. So capital investment, as I mentioned, 94% of your pipes are PVC, 8 of your pump stations are in pretty good shape. But we do have 2 pump stations that we really would like to work with the town. Al and I have talked, this has been a long discussion with Webb. But the West Entry Pump Station over here, servicing an industrial area, it needs an upgrade. It was built in 1971. It received the Agron wastewater flow. We'd ultimately like to completely replace the wet well, all new pumps, and install a new force main that would allow us to take the flow, which now goes through this residential neighborhood and around to the Patchett Interceptor. We want to build a new pump station and a new force main and bypass this whole neighborhood. That'll renew the entire asset, and it'll get an industrial waste out of the residential neighborhood. So that's something that we've got targeted right away for the town of Lysander. The other one is the Emerald Cove Pump Station. It was built in 1987. It needs a new wet well structure. It needs new pumps and new controls. So while we don't necessarily see a lot of I&I issues, we do see an opportunity for some pretty significant pump station investments. Keeping in mind that the West Entry Pump Station and a new force main, we'd be looking at $2.5 million project for that. So what does this mean when we talk about the capital investment, and why do we think that this makes business sense for the town of Lysander? What we're showing here is the current average user charge, and what does the customer pay in the town of Lysander today in 2021? And it's a combination, as Frank mentioned, of 2 charges on their tax bill. The dark blue representing the wet unit charge, about $450 per year. And then the average sewer district charge, which ranges throughout the districts in Lysander, but on average, it's about $60 per year. Going forward, we have 2 options, consolidated and not consolidated. And what do each of those lines represent? And the blue line, that's our supersize. So you can see this, the dark blue line, as we supersize our plant and we take on a larger debt service and increased O&M, our number goes up, and it ends up somewhere around $500-$600 per year, if not more. At the same time, your rent charge going up because increased O&M levels, increased rates for services to get to market rate values, and then tacking on an additional annual O&M or a capital charge of about $1.1 million per year eventually to get into routine asset renewal. And you're looking at going from about $60 per year to just under $300. Combined total, somewhere between just over $800 if we do nothing. And again, our rate has to go up. We have to build bigger plants. We spend more money. The light blue line, and we've modeled this in great detail, and we've looked at investments to all assets throughout the consumption. on capital investment in every village, in every town, and ultimately you don't see it on the 2027, but also the city. And when we do that, we've proven that by avoiding that extra supersized O&M and supersized capital, we can take that capital investment and those O&M charges and we can invest it at the local level. And we can control the cost so that they stay significantly lower than the do-nothing option. So what does this look like on the long term? And again, as I mentioned, so we're looking at here in this chart, this is everybody all in. This is our vision when we started out looking at this in 2019. We wanted everybody in. We wanted to know, does this make business sense? And so we modeled it out. And what you can see here and the little blips is when different municipalities came on, and obviously with a big jump, this is the city. So by year 7, we modeled everybody in. And what does that look like? The top is our do nothing. The total cost of everybody in the Consolidated Sanitary District would be close to $200 million a year. And that's considering everybody's individual O&M, WEPS capital, and all the individual municipalities' capital. If everybody was doing everything correctly, that's what the total sewer, the cost of sewer would be throughout Onondaga County. The blue line below it, consolidated approach, $150 million per year. And again, a lot of that is due directly to the reduction in our operating expenses. So from a Lysander perspective, what would it cost the average customer? $900 per year to do nothing? $700 per year if we go consolidated. Obviously, it's a model. It's, you know, not what we actually, this is just looking at the scenarios of what it could be. We're not saying those rates would be that, but we wanted to take a true hard look at apples to apples. What's it going to be in from a business perspective to do consolidation? And based on that, we feel it makes good business sense. And that's why we feel so strongly about pushing this forward and getting everybody united in water and getting a singular cost, singular ownership, and reinvesting in local assets. So as Frank mentioned, earlier this week, the county legislature did pass a resolution authorizing the lease agreements with Van Buren, Lysander, and the Village of Baldwinsville. With your review and approval, an authorization for the town supervisor to sign that lease agreement. As soon as that's done, WEPS and town personnel will work together to assemble all the background information and push us to a long-term lease agreement. As soon as that's fully executed, we assume ownership, we take on the utility accounts, and we begin planning our capital investments in your utilities. And that's all for me.
So at this point, Mr. Supervisor, members of the board, Al, we'll take some questions that you might have. I mean, we gave you a lot of information here. PowerPoint certainly available for us to show it to you. Whatever questions you might have, we will answer for you at this point.
Well, I have a question.
Hi, Frank.
It's Bob Duras. This all sounds great. And I mean that sincerely.
Can you talk any more? Could you ask this question? Yeah.
Where does the what happens with new development in terms of new sewer lines? And how does that decision get made?
So I'll start out answering that, and then Shannon and I usually play off each other. What you think about this arrangement is really different than what
he just asked about development.
So if you have a new subdivision or a new track,
it makes sense to me. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I would add is nothing changes.
We don't want to be in the business of programming development in your town. We don't have the time for that. And that's not what we're supposed to do. That's not what we want to do. What we're supposed to do is to make sure that when your constituent base is able to use their facilities at home, that everything is transferred effectively to a treatment plant, is treated properly, and discharged properly. That's all we're interested in. So think of it that way, that whatever you're doing now in terms of getting information and data and designs and reports and plan sign-offs to us is the same thing that we do under the lease arrangement. Again, the only difference is going forward in the future, once they're constructed and built, we then own them, and then we have to maintain them.
Would the capacity increase by doing this?
Yeah,
I think you guys are muted.
Yeah, here, I'll turn myself off. So Bob asked if would the capacity exists, and the capacity at Baldwinsville Seneca Knowles from a flow standpoint is in good shape, in my understanding. Our limiting constraint is biological oxygen demand. One of the concerns that the town has had for quite some time is we would love to see the DSK treatment plant design load increased by the DEC. I know that's what was done for the Oak Orchard treatment plant, and we would to continue to allow growth in the town of Lysander and not limit our economic development opportunities, we'd love to see that same process take place for the Baldwinsville Seneca Knowles plant.
So I don't know who the other guy was in. You know?
That would be.
I think that makes all the sense in the world, and whether you decide to consolidate under our umbrella or not, the same general question is there, and the same general concern that you just expressed is there. Of course, you know, we would work with you to do that. That's not necessarily a consolidation issue, it could be, but you know, whether you want to continue to own your assets yourself or whether we take them on, certainly economic development and the ability to provide for different loadings and higher loadings and higher flow rates is important. So yes, your concern is our concern.
Anybody else have a question?
That's all I got. I mean, that's what we were talking about before. That was
Hey Frank, I think we, at this point in time, we don't have any additional questions. Could you send over that PowerPoint presentation, and we'll publish it on the website, and continue to discuss in work session among the board, and get back to you with any additional questions?
Let me say this. In the meantime, if anybody develops any questions, you can always email or call Shannon or myself. Be happy to answer questions. The next step as well, in addition to sending you the PowerPoint, if you have it already, and I think you have your town attorney, I think, has received the lease agreement.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we got it.
I think that's already been sent to him. If not, it will be sent very shortly. We talked with county attorneys today about just that point. So we can send you the PowerPoint. You can expect to see the lease agreement. And then when you're ready as a board and you fully understand everything that's going on and the reasons for it, we'd ask you to vote on a resolution to endorse the lease and become part of the LEP pool.
Okay. Thanks, Frank and Shannon. We appreciate you giving the presentation, and we look forward to working with you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we got a few more minutes, so I think that was one of the questions Al and I had, you know, where if we could get that Seneca Knowles water treatment plant to get more capacity like they did with Oak Orchard, that they, it was significant, correct?
Oh, Oak yeah, they got a 50% design loading capacity at right. Oak Orchard. So the, for the folks here that don't know, Oak Orchard and BSK are sister plants, built around the same time, essentially the same design, same initial equipment, and same design loading capacity. So there's a, you know, logic says that they got it approved for Oak Orchard, the design load increase, they should be able to get approved for Baldwinsville Seneca Knowles.
Because it's the same, it's the exact same plant.
It's essentially the exact same plant.
What else?
Then I'm gonna take check my mail. I kind of rushed in here.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we'll have to have some more conversations about it, but I thought that answered a lot of the questions we had so far. Okay.
Well, I could talk to you. I had one question, but I think I already know the answer to it, and that would have been Red Rock. But what about those places down along the river? But when he said that they would adopt something after it was built, then it would still be our responsibility to cover sewers down to the Red Rock region.
Yeah,
right.
Al,
you know what I mean?
If we're putting in new sewers, that's still our responsibility. Then once they're established, they take then WEP would take them over, like in a new development.
The developer would put in the new
sewer. Yeah, the developer right. would, but I mean,
yeah,
it's not on them. It's on, we have to make sure that we take care of that.
I was talking about something slightly different. Oh. I was talking about down along the Seneca River, down over in the Red Rock area where people are on sewers.
If a consent order came in, I do believe that the, with, I'll have to have Tony.
You know what? That's a good question to ask.
I'll have to have Tony take a closer look at that. Lease agreement that could be looked at two different ways.
Right. The only that's why I'm curious about it, because the way that he sounded, they would take ownership of it after it was constructed, which means it would still be our responsibility to put something in. And I don't know if the consent order makes a difference or not, but anyhow, that's my question.
Yeah. That's a good question. That will, you know, we should ask them. Yeah.
Mind if I step out?
No. Anybody else got anything else? Because we'll take, we'll end the work session at 7:56.
Okay.
Yeah. Please don't. Oh, did you? Yeah, that's what I understand. A buddy of mine went out there. I never was out there.
I got invited to a meeting with him, his team, Bill Marietta, Jimmy Albany, and Matt Driscoll.
Yeah, I'll bet. Oh, he had everything out there. He had everybody's clothes and everything. You know, I'm not a hunter, though, but, you know, I would go skeet shooting. I guess he had skeet there and everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do anything. We just stayed in the main house.
Okay. The only downside that we would that anybody's expressed is the ability for growth. And he answered, it's the same thing. And we've been, you know, when I first came last year in January, I went to a meeting. I'm brand new. I mean, my feet aren't even wet in there. And we went to a meeting, and that's when we had a conversation. I said, I don't know, it looks like this is a done deal. I mean, how do we not get in? Because now we have to absorb all of the costs. Right? And then, you know, if they really want you, they'll squeeze us for... well, and we, like you were talking about those pump stations, there are two that we got. we have some significant issues with that. If we don't do that, we're going to have to probably deal with them this year. Because they've been, we knew that, you know, because this was coming down, we knew it was coming down, we've been maintaining it, but that's why it wasn't in the budget.
Without trying to jump the gun, it just sounds like it's like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think our next meeting we should, you know, dedicate that towards this, can give everybody out, because you don't have the lease agreement, right? I'll get that lease.
You know, I want to see, because I'm a...
Yeah, I'll get that out to everybody. Yeah, I'll get it out to everybody. What I'll do is I'll advance it, scan it, and set it up. Tina?
Good, how are you?
Good. I'll have Nancy scan that lease agreement and send it out to everybody.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks.
Do you hear that, Roman? I'll have Nancy scan the lease agreement.
How did the presentation stop? Both of them are done?